very much, Blessing Zulu, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from The Voice of America on Thursday, June 16th, 2016. Thank you for joining us this evening live from Washington. I'm Dimyake Mwakalyelye. Here are our top stories this evening. Police crash a public protest in Harare, organized by a youth organization, urging President Mugabe to step down.
Today, we will be holding these campaigns in unity and through action. And in this respect, we make the following non-negotiable demands: that President Mugabe steps down with immediate effect and pave way for the progress of the country. That the government abandons the use of the banknotes. That the government accounts for the 2.2 million jobs they promised to the people.
Some political activists tell Zimbabwe's central bank chief to stop toying with the idea of introducing bond notes to save the ailing economy.
Young people, we need to encourage and make sure that people reject these bond notes, because if we do not use them and the market rejects them, then they're going to become obsolete.
Two opposition parties urge the IMF to press for significant reforms before releasing new lines of credit to Zimbabwe.
There is no sense in anyone to say that things have become better now, when everybody else in Zimbabwe sees a situation where things are worsening and deteriorating every day.
The United States ambassador to Zimbabwe says America and Zimbabwe enjoy good relations despite targeted sanctions imposed on top ruling party officials. These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. Police in Zimbabwe today crashed a public demonstration staged by a group of youth from various political organizations who had gathered in central Harare to commemorate the Day of the African Child. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Youth from various opposition political parties and some civic organizations gathered in Harare to commemorate the Day of the African Child. Tajamuka spokesperson Promise Mkwananzi, who also leads the Zimbabwe Informal Sector Organization, told the gathering that President Robert Mugabe should step down immediately for failing to run the country.
Today, we will be holding these campaigns in unity and through action. And in this respect, we make the following non-negotiable demands: that President Mugabe steps down with immediate effect and pave way for the progress of the country. That the government abandons the use of the banknotes. That the government accounts for the 2.2 million jobs they promised to the people.
Mkwananzi also castigated the sitting government for its alleged violation of the rights of the country's citizens. He said the current cash shortages were an example that Mr. Mugabe had failed to grow the country's economy.
That the government publicly accounts for the 15 billion and 10 million youth fund and corruption and laziness in ministries, government departments and parastatals. That the government accounts for Zamara and release immediately and unconditionally those who are illegally detained.
But the commemoration was short-lived after heavily armed cops arrived in three trucks and started assaulting the youths.
Tachamuka!
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 The youths ran in different directions. In the process, four youths who were severely injured were detained at Harare Central Police Station. One of the activists, Denford Ngadzuore, was later assaulted by unknown assailants at a public hearing that was organized by the Harare City Council. Ngadzuore has since been taken to a local clinic where he is being treated. MDCT Youth Secretary Lavmo Chinoputsa criticized the heavy-handedness of the Zimbabwe Republic Police, saying their actions were unconstitutional.
As people of Zimbabwe, we should be able to demonstrate whenever we feel there's a need to demonstrate, and we are shocked that the police continues to operate as if they are a department within the political part of ZANU-PF. We are worried that the police continues to fail to adhere to the constitution, whereby they should allow young people or any person in Zimbabwe wants to demonstrate for that matter to demonstrate.
Police spokesperson Cherit Charamba told Studio 7 by phone that the Tajamuka youths did not seek police clearance to commemorate the Day of the African Child. Mkwananzi said they would not seek police clearance in an independent Zimbabwe. Mkwananzi issued a statement late this afternoon saying they have lined up a series of protests until President Mugabe leaves office. The Day of the African Child is celebrated annually on June 16th. The Soweto Uprising in 1976, hundreds of youth were shot and some died in protests against the poor quality of education and the right to be taught in their own language instead of Afrikaans. The theme of this year's Day of the African Child is right to participate, let children be seen and heard. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Some political activists met with Zimbabwe Central Bank Governor John Magunjika yesterday to express their dissatisfaction over the bank's moves to introduce bond notes. The activists, drawn from various political parties, told Magunjika that the bond notes, designed to boost exports, would fuel recession in the country that is now set to grow by less than 2% this year due to lack of foreign direct investment, fears over the indigenization laws, and other issues. Maureen Kademaunga, a PhD candidate at Pretoria University, says they told Magunjika to use conventional ways of reviving the economy instead of introducing the bond notes. She tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that the meeting with Magunjika was not encouraging.
We met with him at the end of the day yesterday, and I went there with young people from various sectors, like young economists working in the banking sector, youth political leaders from the MGCT, CBP, and also Zimbabwe People First. And then we also had civil society leaders and just general concerned Zimbabweans. And our recommendation to the RBZ was that we must seriously consider to drop the introduction of bond notes as a mitigatory measure.
And what was the governor's response?
The governor's response was not very forthcoming for us, because I thought that throughout the meeting he tried to be very aggressive and not want to tackle that issue. He wanted to focus on other issues. But when it came to the issue of bond notes, he appeared as if the decision had already been made. And he tried to even impress on us that it is a good idea, which we still don't believe. But I think that the RBZ, this is now my own assessment, the RBZ is not independent. And as long as there's no political will from those in government, especially the RPF part of the government, then the governor is not really an independent person to be able to take up suggestions and reflect on that policy announcement.
Now, if the governor goes ahead and implements his plans of introducing bond notes, what course of action did you promise to take?
In that unfortunate event that they do not reconsider, as young people, we're going to encourage and make sure that people reject these bond notes. Because if we do not use them and if the market rejects them, then they're going to become obsolete.
That was Maureen Kademaunga, a political activist and PhD candidate at the University of Pretoria, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare. Meanwhile, opposition parties have urged the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, to press for significant political and economic reforms before releasing any new lines of credit to Zimbabwe. In a statement, the MDC, led by Morgan Tsvangirai and former Finance Minister Tendai Biti's People's Democratic Party, say the IMF appears to be ignoring public discontent over the current deteriorating economic and political situation in Zimbabwe. An IMF delegation is currently in Zimbabwe under a staff-monitored program. The Bretton Woods Institution recently praised Zimbabwe for embarking on what it termed some visible financial reforms, but noted that the economic situation is deteriorating fast in the country. The IMF urged Zimbabwe at a meeting in Lima, Peru, a couple of months ago, to carry out major social, economic, and political reforms before getting new lines of credit. Critics say the government, which is saddled with an external debt of almost $9 billion, is dragging its feet on implementing these reforms. We reached Deputy Spokesperson George Mkwananzi of the People's Democratic Party to explain what they want the IMF to do in Zimbabwe.
In the first place, the IMF had imposed certain conditions for the government of Zimbabwe before they could start opening business and the credit lines for them. And as far as we are concerned, those conditions have not yet been put in place. So it is actually surprising that they are now extending an olive branch to the ZANU-PF government, as if ZANU-PF has attended to all the things that they have refused to do so in the past 15 to 20 years back. So it's quite really surprising that they have softened their hearts and stance towards ZANU-PF now.
So you are demanding reforms. What type of reforms do you want now?
We still expect that the ground in Zimbabwe be democratized, because it has become worse than before when the IMF was demanding it to be democratized. The space for the opposition to operate is being limited, where they still get pounced upon by the police each time they try to hold their meetings to access the electorate. Over and above the issue of the laws that govern investment coming from outside continue to be hardened and tightened, we still see, you know, a very intransigent government of Zimbabwe squeezing out everybody else except ZANU-PF government. I mean, there is no sense in anyone to say that things have become better now, when everybody else in Zimbabwe sees a situation where things are worsening and deteriorating every day.
That was George Mkwananzi, deputy spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party, led by Tendai Biti. He was speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Johannesburg in South Africa. United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Harry Thomas Jr. says America and Zimbabwe enjoy good trade relations, saying with the Southern African country actually enjoying a trade surplus last year despite targeted sanctions imposed on President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle more than 10 years ago. Reporter Ivan Chifera has the details from Harare.
Responding to questions from the public at a function organized by social media enterprise 263 Chat, Ambassador Thomas Jr. said last year Zimbabwe exported goods worth $65 million to the United States.
It's in your favor, and we have normal trade relations. We'd like to see them expand, and that's why last year my distinguished predecessor, Ambassador Wharton, took a business delegation to the U.S.
Ambassador Thomas Jr. said he is working on improving trade between the two countries. Zimbabwe is America's 164th trading partner in the world. As for the targeted sanctions, Ambassador Thomas Jr. said the United States President Barack Obama and the U.S. Senate could only review them on the back of genuine economic and political reforms.
98 individuals, 68 entities. What will it take for the Senate and President of the United States have to be convinced that there is genuine economic as well as political reform? A good start would be an implementation of your constitution. It's the Zimbabwean people's constitution.
Ambassador Thomas Jr., who earlier met the visiting IMF delegation, said it was America's wish that the Zimbabwean government clarifies its economic policies and tackle corruption so as to attract meaningful investment.
We know that people are suffering. So we hope that the government's economic policies are clear, transparent, and will allow for direct investment. As I'm sure you know, that sanctions have nothing to do with Zimbabwe's inability to access the international financial institution. Zimbabwe cannot access the international financial institution because before sanctions were imposed, Zimbabwe stopped paying the international.
He said the United States remained Zimbabwe's biggest donor and had this year provided $55 million in food aid and security and was spending millions of dollars in fighting HIV/AIDS. Ambassador Thomas Jr. said, apart from Nigeria, Zimbabwe received more U.S. scholarships than any other country on the African continent. Ambassador Thomas Jr. also said he hoped the United States government would continue the Mandela Washington Fellowship for young African leaders even after President Obama leaves office next January. About 60 young Zimbabweans left the country today for the program. They will be attached to various universities and other institutions before meeting President Obama. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Mm-hmm. The Sanganai Tlangangani Tourism Expo kicked off in Bulawayo today with some exhibitors as well as local and international buyers of tourism products and services saying the return of the event to Bulawayo would help them reach more clients. Our correspondent Taurai Shava brings more.
A marketing manager with a Gweru-based lodge and safari operating company, Amanda Mafa, said she expected that the hosting of the event in Bulawayo would expose the company to more potential clients.
We've got a lot more buyers than we had last year. We hope to benefit from speaking to the buyers and getting them to buy our product. We offer safaris, accommodation, and also concentrate a lot on land conservation.
A South African-based buyer, Mark Ndlovu, who has attended previous expos, said Zimbabwe remains one of the favorite tourist destinations in the sub-region, adding that despite the negative image, he has never experienced any violence or ever felt at risk while in the country. Ndlovu, however, decried the fact that the US dollar is the most popular among the multiple currencies being used in the country, saying this makes it rather expensive to sell Zimbabwean package tours to his clients who are mainly from the middle class.
Excellent. I think Zimbabwe offers more than all these other Southern African countries have offered because you basically can do anything here except for the coastline. There's no coastline. But I mean, Kariba makes it up because then also you can spend time on the houseboats and stuff. But if I were to compare now the other countries that use their own currencies compared to the US dollar, then it makes this destination quite expensive.
Ingrid Gotter, an international buyer based in the Netherlands, told Studio 7 that it was the first time to attend the Zimbabwe Expo.
Zimbabwe, to me, I think it's very special because you're in a very challenging state at the moment. So I love to bring the tourists here. You've got a beautiful country. We've been to Kariba. We are on a tour from the tourism board, very well organized. We saw some stunning places, Hwangi, Fig Falls, Kariba, Matusadona, and it's beautiful. I'm very impressed.
Zimbabwe Tourism Authority Chief Executive Officer Kariko Gakaseke implored both local and foreign media to write truthfully about Zimbabwe, saying it is not prone to the chaos or violence that some sections of the media try to portray. Gakaseke said ZTA had decided to bring the expo to Bulawayo as a way of trying to revitalize the tourism sector in the city and the region. The Sanganai Tlanganani Expo, now in its ninth year, is a national event which is recognized on the United Nations World Tourism Organization calendar. Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko will officially open the expo tomorrow evening. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
Coming up, we take a closer look at the heated public parliamentary hearings on the local government bill. Stay tuned. But first, a look at regional and international news. U.S. President Barack Obama is in Orlando, Florida today to comfort a city reeling from the country's biggest mass shooting ever and meet privately with the families of the people killed and wounded at a gay nightclub last Sunday. Obama is expected to meet with relatives of the 49 people killed and 53 wounded at the club in the early hours of Sunday when an American-born Muslim sprayed round after round of bullets at revelers who were dancing to Latin music and partying with friends. A British Member of Parliament died after being shot in her constituency in Yorkshire, Northern England, police said. Joe Cox, a 41-year-old of the opposition Labour Party and mother of two, was injured and left bleeding on the pavement near Leeds today. West Yorkshire police said it arrested a 52-year-old man after the incident. And finally, a collection of U.S. political surveys this week shows that Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is pulling ahead of Republican challenger Donald Trump 5 months before November's national election. Clinton, a former U.S. Secretary of State seeking to become the country's first female president, holds an average 5.6 percentage point lead in several polls over the brash real estate mogul who overtook a large Republican field of candidates, many of them current or former senators and governors, in his first bid for elected office. You're listening to Studio 7 coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. Zimbabwe. Zimbabweans in most parts of the country have been rejecting the Local Government Laws Amendment Bill, which seeks to give the Minister of Local Government power to suspend and fire councillors and city mayors. The parliamentary hearings that have been held in Mashingo, Bulawayo and Harare, among other urban centres, have been recording a lot of discontent over some of the bill's provisions, viewed by some political activists, civic society leaders and members of the public as being allegedly too draconian for running council affairs. The hearings come at a time local government minister Xavier Kasukuwere have been clashing with senior council officials in Gweru, Harare and Bulawayo, accusing them of either being incompetent or flouting some provisions of the Urban Councils Act in appointing town clerks and their subordinates. Kasukuwere recently suspended Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni, Gweru Mayor Hamutendi Kombai and his councillors, and has been at loggerheads with the Bulawayo City Council over a tender to set up a shopping complex. In Harare today, there were clashes between opposition supporters and some suspected ruling party activists at one of the hearings. For perspective, we reached Butler Tambo of Public Policy Research Institute of Zimbabwe. He tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that the bill is ill-timed.
Good. I was saying that if you look at the local government bill, it is rather misplaced, because we would have thought that the minister would concentrate on the issues of devolution of power, which are a constitutional issue under Chapter 14, and at least bring about a bill which seeks to make provincial councils and metropolitan councils a reality in Zimbabwe. But he has just come up with a bill that seeks to punish especially local authorities by firing mayors, chairpersons and councillors. And that's rather unfair, because it also distracts the issue of service delivery within this particular city. But what we also have to note that is problematic about this bill is that, one, like I said, it doesn't speak into issues of devolution, but it also talks about an independent tribunal. But funny enough, the independent tribunal, which is supposed to deal with issues of those that have been fired or suspended, is not independent in any way, because the minister is the one who appoints the members of this particular tribunal, the first thing. And then the second thing is that those same people who constitute the tribunal, their salaries and the allowance are going to be determined by the minister. Not only that, it also means that the local authority itself that has been affected by the suspension is the one that is going to pay for these particular allowances. For most local authorities right now, they are struggling and they do not have any money. Where will they get money to pay salaries and allowances of people that have been cherry-picked by the minister of local government? Because what's going to stop the minister from appointing his own friends and appointing any other of his maybe party functionaries and the like, and seeking to enrich them through the stripping of local authorities? These are some of the problems that I see about this particular bill.
And indications of that, maybe this bill is going to pass anyway in Parliament, because ZANU-PF has got the majority in Parliament.
No, I get your point, but at the moment, I think people can almost celebrate or ride on the current crest of success that has come through. Let's look at what happened with the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission deal. After most people in Zimbabwe had managed to refuse or he had given an adverse report and struck down that particular deal, the Minister of National Healing, who is Vice President Mpogo, had to withdraw that particular deal, and now it is being recrafted again. So I believe that with the current running way, most people in Zimbabwe have refuted or have refused this particular deal. We're just hoping that the deal will be taken back to the Minister of Local Government so that he can be more serious in fixing these issues and attend to the issues that people are raising.
That was Butler Tambo, of Public Policy Research Institute of Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo. Gibbs Dube also reached Effort Nkomo, a ZANU-PF activist, who says that the bill is designed to contain corruption and other important issues affecting local authorities.
If anything is amiss or things are not going well within local authorities, let the minister have the power and authority to discharge his mandate to put things right. I know we have been talking about corruption, but in the eyes of the majority, corruption has been fixed on ZANU-PF, on government, and we have been letting our eyes not see what the local authorities were doing.
But we see that right now, Mr. Nkomo, the local government minister is at loggerheads with local authorities over various issues. So people are now saying that, in fact, the minister wants to have more power to actually fire or maybe suspend local authority officials.
Whatever it has been, it's got nothing to do with what is at hand. If the local authority is not doing justice to the constituencies or to the people that the councillors lead, he has got the right, in my view, to look at what they are doing. If they're not doing what they should be doing, I think he's got the right, or they should give him the powers to fire or do what is right.
But at the moment, indications are that the constitution does not allow that, and only the people have got the electoral mandate to actually do that kind of work in terms of councillors. So how does the minister come in then?
That's the beauty of democracy. Democracy demands that where it is felt that there should be changes, X should be changed, constitution should be changed, let majority exercise that mandate.
And do you think that this bill is going to pass in parliament?
In my view, it's going to pass.
Why?
You know what majority means. The majority rules. End of story.
You are literally saying that ZANU-PF is dominating parliament and nothing can happen.
Yes. If they're in majority, what they decide and agree on carries the day.
And is that democracy, Mr. Gomo?
That's democracy. Democracy, it means that those that are in majority can dictate the terms. If you want to undo the democracy, I can't see how you can undo democracy.
But some Zimbabweans are saying that is typical dictatorship, isn't it?
Are they in majority?
What's your opinion?
If they have to be a referendum, let be a referendum and let's see who wins in the referendum.
So is it that government should actually focus on this bill instead of some issues that are affecting the country? Most people are saying this is a waste of time.
True as it may sound, there are a lot of challenges in the country. But given a situation where government has got to face that particular challenge, it's got to exercise that mandate in terms of majority.
That was Effort Nkomo, a ZANU-PF activist, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. Now, in a related development, several people were injured today following skirmishes between the police and political activists outside the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, where the activists had gathered to express their dismay over the central bank's plans to introduce bond notes. Pastor Evan Mawerire of the hashtag This Flag movement led calls for the abandonment of the bond notes, saying that they will fuel recession in the country. For more details, visit our website, www.voazimbabwe.com. You're listening to Studio 7, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. Of course, as every day and as every Thursday, we have our Live Talk program from 8:30 p.m. And today's hosts of the Women's Roundtable, Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye and Praxedis Jeremiah, will be talking with listeners and women living in the diaspora and, of course, the International Women's Dominion Conference that is taking place in Delaware here in the United States. So if you wish to join the show, please call 001-202-619-2077. That number again is 001-202-619-2077. You can also send us a message or number on our WhatsApp 001-202-465-0318. That number again 001-202-465-0318. Please note that we're also live streaming on Studio 7 Facebook page, so make sure to participate that way as well. We're wrapping up now, coming to the end of our show, but before we go, a quick recap of our top stories today. Police crashed a public protest in Harare organized by a youth organization urging President Mugabe to step down. Some political activists told Zimbabwe's central bank chief to stop toying with the idea of introducing bond notes to save the ailing economy. Two opposition parties urged the IMF to press for significant reforms before releasing new lines of credit to Zimbabwe. And then also the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, Harry Thomas Jr., says relations between Zimbabwe and the U.S. are good despite the targeted sanctions. And that's our program this Thursday evening. Please stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele, hosted by Ntungamile Nkomo. I am Dimyake Mwakalielye here in Washington, wishing you a very pleasant evening and a very good night. Be sure to join us again tomorrow.